Kennedy Warne, good morning.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm so sick of these Weasel and Stoat jokes.
Gosh.
Weasels
I
and Stoat.
I regret mentioning it.
So do I regret you mentioning. One is Weasley. One is Weasley distinguished, and the other is Stoatly different. Thanks to
That's
Diane and Vicargall.
That's
one is totally obvious and the other is reasonably easy to see.
Oh, well, it's very good to see that other people share my train of thought.
Our music contributor, Jeremy Taylor, was piling in as well. Right, why are we talking about weasels and stoats?
Well, you might recall, well, of course you will recall, last session at the end of our talk, I was shocked and amazed to see a weasel cross the road when I was talking about predator-free mahi.
The question was why, but enough already.
Yes, well, there was no. And then afterwards, the predator team corrected me and said, no, that was a stoat. So clearly my ability to weaselly distinguish a stoat was substandard. But the reason I particularly wanted to put that in is that if you think that's an awful pun, you ought to go along to the national pun, the final of the New Zealand's National Pun Contest, which is being held in Wellington this Saturday, to hear some really good puns. And for me, it's a treat because it seems that 36 years of dad jokes have finally paid off because one of my sons is representing Auckland at the event. So there you are.
Now, I wonder where he got his talents from.
Well, exactly. I'm pleased to see, of course, the word dad joke, which I find incredibly sexist, implying that mothers are the adults in the room while fathers goof around making jokes and saying things like, this was going straight to the pool room. Dad joke, the term has entered the Merriam-Webster dictionary this year, 2019. So now it's an official word. And
it's a term of affection. You still haven't told me how to tell the difference between a weasel and a stoat.
Well, a stoat is about twice the size of a weasel.
There we are.
If it's large, sort of, you know, small cat sized, but very sinuous when it runs. Whereas a weasel really is a bit of an overgrown rat.
Right.
So there you go. Now, shall we dive into speaking of puns? The murky ethical water of shark diving?
We shall, and it's murky ethical, but also it's been a real bone of contention just to keep mixing metaphors very badly. Issue down south.
Well, of course, the legal decision has teeth now. So, okay, that's the last pun. At issue here is a shark cage dive operator. Who offers to take people to see great white sharks near the Titi Islands, the northern Titi Islands, east of Rekiura Stewart Island. Now, there's only about five places in the world that you can do this, and New Zealand happens to be one place. This usually happens in proximity to seal colonies, seals being a favoured prey item of great white sharks. Now, power divers, of course, also operate in Rekiura, right round the coast there, and they considered their safety was compromised by an activity that uses food to lure sharks. I should say food, well, I say food, burley or chum, so food, fish extract, really, to lure sharks to the boat. So the power divers took a case against the shark dive operator based on a part of the New Zealand Wildlife Act 1953, which says that no person may, without lawful authority, hunt or kill any absolutely protected wildlife, and goes on to say, and the glossary of the Act says, that hunt or kill includes pursuing, disturbing, or molesting any wildlife, any protected wildlife. So the question for the court to decide was whether luring sharks to a boat for the pleasure, the viewing pleasure of tourists, constitutes pursuing, disturbing, or molesting. The High Court said, no, it didn't. There had to be an intent to hunt or kill in order for those qualifying adjectives of pursuing verbs, pursuing, disturbing, or molesting, to come into effect. So you had to have an intent to hunt or kill. Clearly, the shark dive operator does not have an intent to hunt or kill the animals. Now, the Court of Appeal So the power divers weren't happy with that and took a subsequent case to the Court of Appeal, which disagreed with the High Court, sided with the power divers, and said that the point of the Act was to prevent harmful or potentially harmful interaction with humans. They asked, is luring a shark to a boat a potentially harmful interaction? The court thought it was. It said the use of burley or chum and bait as attractants was, in fact, pursuing the sharks in the same way that using a bait or a fly to draw a fish to an angler's hook is pursuing the fish. They further added that attractants are designed to cause the animal to deviate significantly from its natural swimming pattern, thus disturbing the animal. Well, Shark Experience, the dive operator, took the case further up the chain to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, just recently, has overturned the Court of Appeal's decision, and it agrees with the with Shark Experience that a definition of disturb, which simply means breaking up the peace or tranquility of protected wildlife, would cast too broad a net. If you said that throwing some fish into the fish extract into the sea to attract sharks was disturbance, then walking through the bush or swimming in the sea could be disturbance, because each of those would often result in startling wildlife, and some of that wildlife may be protected. So the Supreme Court considered that cage diving did not constitute pursuit, and nor was it obviously molesting, which is to say intentionally troubling, distressing or injuring them. I just would add here that there's a lot of reference to the Oxford English Dictionary in many Supreme Court decisions. Everyone wants to try to figure out what these words mean, because, you know, in an act that's 60 years old, no one sort of can remember what was in the minds of the people who wrote it. Anyway, the Supreme Court said that they thought that luring a shark to a cage did not rise to the level of significant harm, and therefore it was not disturbing. Now, it's interesting that one of the five Supreme Court judges disagreed with that view. Ellen France wrote that, looked in the Act and found that, for example, disturbing the nest of a protected bird is illegal under the Wildlife Act, regardless of whether harm is done to the bird. And she thought that if that's the way they were using the word disturb to refer to that and other instances, then maybe luring a shark did amount to disturbance. Now, it's interesting, I think, to notice that the Marine Mammals Act is much tighter than this. You're not even allowed to swim less than 100 metres from a whale, far less feed them. No food can be thrown near any marine mammal, nor shall any person make a loud or disturbing noise near whales. So we make these value judgments based on, I guess, an idea of relative kinship between humans and obviously large sentient mammals. And sharks are not quite in that club. So we've got this ranking, this value ranking, which is a tricky concept. Well, and I guess it's constantly changing.
The real question is, what would Jacques Cousteau think?
Oh, touché.
I'm sorry. It is a serious matter, because I thought a lot of this was actually about the safety of the power divers, but this has taken a different approach. Like, they are concerned that they're going to become...
Well, yes, of course, that's the motivation, yeah. But the only applicable act is the Wildlife Act.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Great sharks became protected species in 2007, so they're trying to use that act as a way of establishing...
I don't know, the workplace safety laws could be...
it's possible,
yeah.
Yes.
I know it's a really serious issue. I certainly don't wish to make light of it. So this was Supreme Court decision. So
that's
this
right.
is the end
so
of the road.
The end of the road. Yes. So,
right.
So you can pay your $500 and go and look at a shark if you wish. I've looked, maybe we'll talk another time, but I've looked at whale shark diving, another great shark, of course, in the Philippines. And, you know, there are real questions to be asked about the trade-off between disturbing an animal and the utilitarian argument that this provides some long-term conservation benefit, that those who go and look at a shark will subsequently behave
better. Let's go again next time on the same subject. There's more in it. Thanks, Kennedy Warne.